Thank you, Richard, for that reading. It's not long. It's not often, is it, that the reading's longer than the sermon? But you did really well, Richard. Have a drink of water. I've really enjoyed reminding myself of the message that Isaiah brings. But there's one thing, or at least one thing, that's puzzled me. 3 or 4 years ago, I got a message from a friend who is a pastor in Florida. He is pastor of certainly by British standards, quite a large church. And he said him and his family were coming to the UK for a 3-week vacation. And would I like to go and just take care, look after his church while he was in the UK? And he told me that he would be living in his house, using his car, the swimming pool that we could use. And all I needed to do was to preach on the Sunday. So it didn't take me long. It didn't take Sue and I long to say that would be a good opportunity. So we went and we had a really good time. It was George Bernard Shaw who said this: "The United States and Great Britain are two countries separated by a common language." And I had to learn very quickly that some of the terms we use in the UK are not the same as they use in the US, and some of the pronunciations are quite different. And one that I've been thinking about recently is how you pronounce the name of this prophet, Isaiah. We call him Isaiah, but of course in the States he's called Isaiah. And I've been thinking about which is the correct pronunciation. I don't know what you would think, but it seems to me that there's a lot going for the American pronunciation, because it's Isaiah. So Isaiah seems to me a better pronunciation. In fact, I was having a conversation about this with Tom a little while ago, and saying that I think Isaiah is a better pronunciation. But Tom reminded me, and he's probably said it to you, that the benefit of using the name or pronouncing his name Isaiah is that Isaiah's message is that we are to lift our eyes higher to God. And I think that's a really good point, because that lies right at the heart of what Isaiah is calling us to do. Lift up your eyes. It's vital that we have the right focus in our lives. So we need to, if you in the future think, what's Isaiah all about? Just think of that. Lift up your eyes higher. So we look to the God who is our creator, the God who saves, the God who calls us to a new way of living. And if you look at the scriptures, we are reminded that everything starts with God. The first four words of the Bible itself: in the beginning, God created. The beginning of the Gospel of John: in the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. The Lord's Prayer that we say each Sunday begins, "Our Father in heaven." So Jesus says, when you pray, lift up your eyes to remember it is to whom you pray. I've really enjoyed getting to grips with some of Isaiah's message. And one of the things that I discovered, which I don't think I knew before, was that the name Isaiah and the name Jesus, or Yeshua as it would have been pronounced, come from the same root word, meaning salvation. So the name Jesus, the name Isaiah, literally mean the Lord is our salvation, or the Lord saves. So we are called to look to the Lord, who is our salvation, who is the life giver, who is the only source of lasting hope, who is creator, who alone gives us our lives meaning and purpose. But Isaiah wants us to look to God, not only so that we acknowledge his greatness, his love, the wonder of his promises, but also so that as we see him more clearly, we can see more clearly how flawed this world is, and indeed how flawed our own lives are. Isaiah's message is the message of the Bible as a whole. God's perfect world has been spoiled by our wrong choices. Men and women putting self on the throne, thinking that they know better. It's a trap we can all easily fall into. When we choose our way instead of God's way, that brings consequences. And that's what Isaiah is saying. Separation, judgment. And that's the, if you read the Bible, it's the ongoing story of human disobedience. Humans choosing their own way, rejecting God's way. And yet God's love remains. He woos us, he calls us back to himself. He longs that we would repent and return to him. That wonderful story that Jesus told of what we call the prodigal son, who went far away. But as he came to his right mind, he returns to God and to the Father. And the Father runs and embraces him, welcomes him back. So God calls us back to himself, not to remain the same, but to be transformed. I love the way J.B. Phillips translates Romans chapter 12, verse 2. Don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mold, but let God remold your minds from within, so that you may prove in practice that the plan of God is good for you. So, don't let the world around you, don't let society tell you how to live. Don't let society squeeze you into that society's way. Instead, live God's way. Sue and I had the privilege recently of spending a couple of weeks in Turkey on holiday. We had a great time. We flew back last Monday morning, early Monday morning. And as I was sitting on the plane, it didn't take all that long, a few hours, but I was getting a bit bored, a bit fed up. And imagine what would happen if I'd have thought to myself, well, I really don't like this. I feel cooped up. I feel restricted. I want my freedom. So I got up and opened the emergency exit and jumped out. That freedom would lead only to destruction. See, true freedom is not being able to do what we choose, but it's being able to live in God's perfect way for us. So let's look at the passage, and it's a long passage. We've only got a very short time to look at it. The first part, the beginning of chapter 4, the hope of restoration, a holy remnant. And it continues a section begun in chapter 2. It's a vision of the future, the promise of a new beginning for God's faithful people after the time of judgment. Isaiah foresees, he looks to the future and sees the glorious and beautiful emergence of the promised one, the Messiah, who is also called the branch from the line of David. It's a future day of restoration, of purification, a time of cleansing, leading to a holy people, a remnant set apart for God's purposes. Jerusalem is seen as a place of refuge, a place where God himself dwells. It's a picture of hope and renewal following judgment, a time when Messiah will reign, when the remnant of God's people will be made holy. God will live with them as a restored, protected, and glorious new community. So even in judgment, God provides hope and a future for those who remain faithful. So there's that picture of a glorious future for God's faithful ones. And then we come into chapter 5, the first 7 verses. It's the song of the vineyard. And the question is, what more could God do for his people? It's a parable, if you like, where God is the vineyard owner. He meticulously prepares the vineyard, does everything to make it fruitful and successful. But verse 2, then he looked for a crop of good grapes, but it yielded only bad fruit. Instead of righteousness and justice, the people produced greed, injustice, bloodshed. Instead of living in God's way, they had chosen to follow their own way. They rejected God's law and God's love. And the consequence is a declaration of severe judgment, a radical pruning of the nation. So God looks for fruit, but seasonal. Remember that in John chapter 15, where Jesus talks about himself as the true vine. And he talks about his people being the branches connected to the vine. And he says, "This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples." So there's the question, the challenge from this passage. Where is the fruit in my life and yours? And then the final section, and we haven't got time to go into it in detail. You may want to read this again when you get home. In this part of the passage, Isaiah highlights the sins of the people, which will inevitably lead to judgment. Verses 8 to 10, greed and exploitation, selfishness, me first, which is only going to lead to desolation. Verses 11 and 12, excessive drinking, feasting, seeking pleasure without regard to God's actions, the eat, drink and be merry philosophy, minds on the flesh and not on the spirit. Verses 13 to 17, Isaiah foresees a time of exile where the people will be taken to a foreign land. Everything in which the people trusted will be taken away, will be lost. But amidst it all, God will be exalted by his justice and righteous acts. Verse 18 to 19, Isaiah says, if you cling to sin, you push God away. The people were deliberate in their sins, and yet they blame God for the misery of it all. Verse 20, moral confusion. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Willfully redefining good for evil actually changes nothing in reality. Verse 21, arrogance and pride. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and clever in their own sight. Self-confidence only reveals self-delusion. Paul says in his letter to the Corinthians, the wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's sight. And then verse 22 to 24, woe to those who are heroes at drinking wine and champion of mixing drinks, who acquit the guilty for a bribe but deny justice to the innocent. Therefore, as tongues of fire lick up straw, and as dry grass sinks down in the flames, so their roots will decay, and their flowers blow away like dust. For they have rejected the law of the Lord Almighty, and spurned the word of the Holy One of Israel. Later in this same prophecy, in Isaiah chapter 40, he writes, grass withers, and the flowers fall, but the word of our God lasts forever. God has given us his word, the scriptures. And I think many of us kind of wish that we'd be given a loose leaf Bible. So the bits we find hard, the bits we find difficult, we just take them out and leave the easy bits. But we can't do that. God gives us his word. He calls us to walk in obedience. Jesus himself said, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and yet do not do what I say? He said, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. We can't have it two ways. We've got to walk in love and in obedience. And then finally, Isaiah points again to the coming time of exile. Let me finish with this. While we're in Turkey, we had the joy of visiting Ephesus, which is comes up quite a few times in the New Testament. It's not a living city now, it's but you can see some of the remains of the buildings that were there. It was one of the major cities in the Roman Empire. It was the melting pot of many religions and philosophies. Paul himself stayed there over 2 years, presenting the Christian gospel through word and miracles. In Ephesus, there were many temples, I think over 40, to various gods and goddesses. Chief among them all was the temple to the goddess Artemis, which was one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Artemis was the one who the people worshipped, at the centre of their religious activity. And so when Paul came and talked about Jesus, about God being the one God, the only way to God is through Jesus Christ, that upset many people. It threatened the local economy, those who were made artifacts for Artemis, the goddess. And so great opposition arose, and there was a riot in the town. People had to, Paul and some of his friends had to leave, but the remaining Christians stayed there and were faithful. But they had a choice to make. Do we remain faithful to Jesus Christ? Or do we go with the flow and continue to worship the goddess Artemis? A choice had to be made. And we too have to make the choice. There is no sitting on the fence. So I'll leave you with a few questions. And when it says, are we, perhaps better ask in each of us, am I? Am I living as a part of the faithful remnant, remaining faithful to God and his word? Am I bearing fruit in my life, in my home, in my community? If God looks at me and says, where's the fruit, how would we answer? And finally, am I listening to and being obedient to God's voice? So just take a moment or two to just ponder on what Isaiah is saying to us. How do we respond? How does this help me to live differently this week? And where do I need to say yes to Jesus' invitation? Let's take a moment to ponder those questions.